Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is Bronwyn Exter. Exter is a singer, songwriter, musician, and educator. She is a graduate of both Smith College in Massachusetts and New School University in New York. In addition to teaching humanities and history, she is also an accomplished musician and singer-songwriter. She has released two CDs. The first one was called Elevator Ride in 2006, and her most recent is called Junkyard, released in 2012, and containing original and compelling songs that are intimate and bluesy, and it certainly shows Exter's considerable talent as a songwriter. She was dubbed a local standout by The New Yorker in 2007 for her performances in New York City venues such as Joe's Pub and The Living Room. And welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you studied violin as a child and started writing songs and stuff, but you quit for over 20 years, you say. So tell us what it is that brought you back to that.
I played violin consistently from age 4 through college, and I don't know whether I quit songwriting or whether it just didn't occur to me anymore for another 20 years because I was busy playing violin and singing in the children's choir here in Ithaca. In college, I was in an a cappella group, and so it didn't occur to me to write songs again until I graduated from college and music seemed to be missing from my life.
So could you remember a moment with something that prompted you to actually start putting words to paper? Was it an event or something?
No, I think I just picked up the guitar again, which was lying around, and played some chords, and that's how the songwriting usually goes. It doesn't start with the words, it usually starts with the chords.
So
I had some chords and wrote a song.
What was the first song you wrote? Do you remember? As an adult?
As an adult, not about the cowgirls. The first song I wrote was about coming home from school at the end of the day and being tired. But that wasn't the first song I wrote that I liked.
Yeah, yeah.
I never saw the light of day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it takes practice. It takes all kinds of ingredients to make a good songwriter, I think, especially experience. That's also a helpful ingredient. Now, your brother was a musician in New York City, and you started hanging out with him and meeting poets and writers. This was while you were in grad school. Did you ever entertain the idea of quitting school and just trying to be a full-time musician?
Not in grad school. I finished grad school and I started teaching. And then 5 years into teaching, I started playing music out and writing songs. So I hadn't written songs yet when I started teaching. And so I was actually releasing Elevator Ride 5 years into teaching. And then I took about a year and a half off from teaching, not necessarily to pursue music full time, but I definitely appreciated having more time for it.
Did you pursue your graduate studies with the same kind of passion that you feel for your music? I can tell you feel passionate by some of the songs that you're writing. And I've seen you perform, and I can tell there's a real passion there. Do you feel that for teaching?
Oh, yeah. I loved the master's program I was in, so that's the other reason that it's always hard to leave teaching and transition into music because I feel equally passionate about them. And it's not the easiest marriage of two occupations, because they each have my heart and they each take up a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
And usually teaching wins.
Well, I can imagine. Yeah, I mean, you can't shortchange either and really become a professional.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with these kinds of professions. Now, I do want to play an excerpt from your first CD called Elevator Ride. And the first song that you said that you actually liked, where we're going to play that, it's called Float. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Float is written from the perspective of Edna Pontellier, the protagonist in The Awakening, which is the book I was teaching in my English class.
That's a Kate Chopin book, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I think in the class we were talking about what the end of the book meant, and I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't read it, but the idea that characters in books die, they're not dying, but it's more of an assassination on the part of the author to make a point that the character can't live in the world that has been created, in this case, around Edna. So it's from her perspective, and it's meant to sort of alleviate the tragedy of that book and kind of run with the point of it, which was, in my mind, I liked the idea that it was about what it meant to be or to want to be an artist in the 1890s as a woman.
Uh-huh. Well, let's listen to this excerpt. This is called Float. Thank you.
You know, you have an amazing sultry voice. It reminds me of Julie London. Do you remember her from the 40s? You also remind me a little bit of Nora Jones. Have you been compared to her at all?
Someone hugged me once thinking I was her from behind.
Really?
Yeah, at the
living
room.
I can see that. There's a resemblance in the voice and the face in some ways. But who are some of your mentors and influences?
The people I listen to, who are my mentors?
I'm thinking who influenced you as a singer and as a songwriter.
Well, my first collaborator, Jonathan Spottiswood, who started the band I was in and wrote the songs that I sang, his band was my favorite in New York City, and his writing style influenced mine in a huge way. He also coached me on singing because I was singing his songs, and so he wanted me to sing them in a certain way, and that shaped my style. Then I'd say Cat Power.
Oh, yeah.
Someone who I love. Mm-hmm. I listen to anything that she puts out. And lately, I'm just listening to The National nonstop.
Ah, okay. So I can understand why you'd be influenced by Cat Power. I like her, too. Are you really cognizant of how you should phrase? And is that because it feels like it's very deliberate in your work,
yeah,
that you want us to get a feeling from some of the phrasing?
Yeah, the phrasing is my favorite part of the process. Once the song is written and it's in my head and I can sing it while doing the dishes or sing it while driving and figure out exactly where the words go and exactly how the melody fits into the phrase, that's my favorite thing to do.
Uh-huh.
And then it's hard to let the song evolve beyond the first phrasing.
Uh-huh. And do you feel like a songwriter should be a storyteller? Because a lot of your songs on Junkyard feel like little mini stories. Is that the influence, too, that you are trying to have a complete story during that three-minute song?
Yeah, I don't know about the word should, but it's definitely how I approach it. I like to construct songs so that the end sort of speaks to the beginning.
Are you influenced by writing, too? Do you ever try to write short stories, literary fiction or anything like that?
I don't. I have no idea how anyone does that, but I read a lot.
Uh-huh. So you're influenced by books. Obviously, that song was from the Kate Chopin book.
Mm-hmm.
The second CD that you put out called Junkyard, you said that it took forever to finally produce this. Was it the compilation of the songs that took a long time to write, or just getting the thing produced?
More the production, and it took moving to Ithaca to really land on my feet with a band. And I was playing in three different bands in New York, and that was a lot of fun, but it was kind of scattered. So when I moved to Ithaca, I started playing regularly with Mike Stark, Dana Billings, and Jen Middaugh.
Mm-hmm.
And so the four of us started, you know, really practicing and arranging the songs together, and then within a year it was really time to record. And prior to that, I don't think it was the right time, though I thought about it a lot over those 7 years.
Did it take you a while to find your own voice? I mean, you said you were skipping around to different bands and probably trying to fit into whatever their flavor was. Did it take you a while to find a voice for yourself?
For sure.
She pauses. Well, I'm just wondering, because your voice seems understated in some ways, like you want people to interpret themselves what you're saying. You're not belting them out and insisting that they hear them a certain way, which I find an interesting technique.
Yeah, the question is, should those stories I tell be coherent? I don't know. I like to be a little cryptic, and I don't know if that's artistic or obnoxious.
Do you have an identity, though, as a singer-songwriter? Do you think of yourself as folk or roots, or do you put yourself in the blues category, or do you not want to categorize?
It's really hard to check boxes on things like the Independent Music Award submission form. This time, this last year, I submitted for alt country because that was the song. Mm. And then I listened to their alt country songs that were in the category with mine, and mine had nothing to do with any of them and should have been in probably Americana.
Your stuff reminds me of Americana blues kind of stuff. A lot of it seems blues influence to me. Yeah. Which brings me to Junkyard, the CD we were talking about. I want to play an excerpt from this CD. This is called Maybelle's Got New Shoes. Tell us about this. This is a very quirky, humorous song. I actually love it.
This song is not autobiographical. That's mostly what I would like to say. And it was just playing with rhymes.
It wasn't
was
influenced by somebody?
A character, like a hometown character who is, you know, someone everyone knows and loves and kind of gets herself in trouble.
Okay, let's listen to this excerpt.
I'm a little older.
Maybelle's Got New Shoes.
She could be stealing someone's heart, I said, we don't know whose. She could be stealing someone's car, I said, we don't get to choose.
You know, I find it really playful and bluesy and really a very fun song. Do you play it live and get kind of a rousing bunch of applause for it? Because it is so fun.
It's really fun to play live because we do those stomps and claps and the whole band does them.
When you were putting Junkyard together, did you find yourself getting into the intricacies of having to arrange differently than you'd heard it in your head once you had real musicians in front of you?
Well, it's kind of like I finally was able to hear it the way I had it in my head with all of the different parts. There are only four of us, but when you're tracking, you can add in all the extra parts. So we have a number of musicians doing cameos on that record.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Bronwyn Exter. She's a singer-songwriter, and we're talking basically about her latest CD called Junkyard. Now, you also work as a teacher, and I want to go back to what you were saying, that the two separate things are sort of hard to keep floating because you have to put so much time into them. How do they interplay, though? I mean, do your students ask you about your career as a singer-songwriter? You've become quite well-known, especially in Ithaca.
We all know each other pretty well, so they know I sing, and I also have a number of students who play music and write songs, so sometimes the conversations go both ways. And I have a really great collaboration at school right now in songwriting with the music teacher there, Dara Anisi. So LACS is a nice place where a lot of conversations that are organic and creative can happen. But in terms of songwriting at school, I've tried to do projects with students who are writing songs. And I think it's the opposite of that idea that's pretty offensive when people say those who can't do teach.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's the opposite. I mean, I could never teach songwriting. I think I'd have to be a much better musician than songwriter to be able to teach it. Because as far as I can tell, you just go write a song. And that is the only instruction I could imagine giving.
Yeah. A lot of writers that I've had on, songwriters and, you know, novelists and fiction writers, talk about how the only thing that they can tell people is to trust themselves. Don't let that inner censor stop you from pursuing it. That, you know, that's number one advice that, that writers often give for people starting out, especially.
There's no formula. There's no rubric.
Yeah.
Just do it.
What influences some of your songwriting? I mean, are you somebody who wakes up in the middle of the night and hears a line in your head, or are you influenced by something that happened emotionally to you? A lot of your songs seem pretty dark. So I was wondering if you, like, transfer some of what's happening in your life into the music as an outlet.
My brother once asked me, what happened to you in Newfield? What was that song about? And I was like, nothing. So they may be unnecessarily dark. I do journal a lot. I like imagery. So a lot of the songs I'm writing now, I definitely have another album of material post-Junkyard that I'm playing that isn't recorded. And a lot of those songs are just imaginings into nature. There's a song from the perspective of a loon. There's a song about a snake.
Nice.
Not that you can necessarily tell that from the story, but that's what the inspiration was. I'm trying to not to write any more songs about the weather. So I'm going to play that one out.
That's funny. That is a topic that people often find themselves writing about. You know, when I first came to Ithaca, I was shocked and amazed at how many collaborations there are with musicians. Have you found a lot of inspiration from some of these collaborations and support? I used to always think musicians were competing with each other. But this town is filled with people who seem to be really, really supporting each other.
Yeah, the New Year's Eve show we did that Nate Richardson orchestrated was an amazing collaboration that involved Johnny Dowd and Mary Lorson and Joe Crookston and Richie Stearns, Zahn Marshburn. But also I've had some songwriting evenings with Mary Lorson and Beverly Stokes and Anna Coogan. And Jenny Stearns is such a huge influence. And we're just starting to learn the backing vocal parts for their songs. It feels like a wonderful collaboration. And that was another one of the bands in the city that I was in, was an all-girl band of people I might have otherwise been competing with, but it's so much more fun to collaborate with them and become friends and support each other.
Yeah, I find that really, really amazing. It seems to me people need mentors, especially when they're starting out. And so collaborating with a whole village of people seems like such a gift.
Such an inspiration.
To people who are creative, yeah. Yeah. I want to play another excerpt from Junkyard. This is the title song. It's called Junkyard. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Junkyard is about the Sophocles play Oedipus. Oedipus gets to die in a sacred garden, having lived a life of noble suffering. And at the time that I wrote that song, I felt that I was enmeshed in a pile of cheap suffering. And so I was thinking about laying that song down in a junkyard, so I guess it's the opposite of Oedipus. If you suffer nobly, you get to die in a sacred garden, and if you suffer cheaply, then you go to a junkyard.
Let's listen to it.
Thank you.
junkyard, oh junkyard of love. I swung on him, swung from his arms is all.
Back to what I was talking about before. These are such melancholy songs, and you don't seem like a melancholy type of person. But it sounds like you're really influenced by literature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the songs that we're playing seem to be coming from some of those places. Well, why is that? Literature is another world that Bronwyn Exter finds herself living in?
I read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm an unhappy person. It's just less fun to write a happy song. There's probably two camps. Like, there are the people who write happy songs, and most of the people who listen to music love happy songs, and that's why they listen to music. So I'm in that little dark minority of melancholy ballad people.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've heard a lot of songwriters say enough of the love songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody starts out usually writing a love song. So I think it's refreshing to have, especially women singer-songwriters, not be writing about the heartbreak of love all the time, you know. So many of Joni Mitchell's songs were like that until she got involved in jazz and politics and opened herself up to other worlds, you know.
There's a lot of heartbreak on Junkyard.
There is, but they aren't love songs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not
the
kind of love songs that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Happy, Skippy, you know, everybody's out of their mind and life isn't really real, you know what I mean? So I think it's kind of refreshing. Are you influenced by people like Joni Mitchell? So many women that I've had on who write songs say she's it.
I would go a little further forward and say I'm influenced by Ani DiFranco.
Ah.
As much by her worldview and the way her turns of phrase, the way she puts things, as her music.
Mm-hmm. Are you somebody who's always practicing? I know you play violin and guitar. Are you practicing all the time in order to stay, you know, in it?
Unfortunately, I don't play violin as much anymore because I sold my violin to pay for Junkyard.
You know what? I was shocked when I read that. You sold your violin to pay for the production of Junkyard. That was the only thing that you could think of, right?
Well, the first half. It paid for the first half of the record, and then the second half I did a Kickstarter campaign with a lot of great supporters.
Do you have any regrets about selling that? What was it, an 18th century
violin? Of course I have regrets
violin.
About selling my violin. I think if I had sold my violin to do something non-musical, that would have broken my heart. But since it was also for a musical project.
Uh-huh. Well, what did you learn from producing this? I heard some people say, oh, God, it was too hard. I don't think I'll ever be able to do it again. Did you find it a really difficult process?
No, I love being in the studio. I love being able to play with different parts. I think next time I'd like to make a simpler album, so maybe a little more stripped down. I got to just hear everything I wanted to hear and layer all the songs and... Matsukuchi Murano was able to hear all that and produce it and make the kind of vision in my head happen. And so I think for the next time, I just want to try it a different way and strip it down and make the arrangements really bare.
We only have a little bit of time left. I want to play one more excerpt from Junkyard. This is called Tire Swing. And this one is absolutely haunting to me. Let's listen.
I've fallen right where I belong.
This is something that could be in a film. I was telling you before we came on air that this is a very haunting song with a specific story, it feels like to me.
Mm-hmm. This is an example of a revised song. I wrote it about one thing, and then 5 years later I scrapped that and wrote it again about something else. And I wrote it in my head in the car. Hmm. Sometimes I write songs in silence, and this was one of those.
Mm, it's a beautiful piece. We're almost out of time. Any new work we can expect, performances?
Mm-hmm. I'm opening for Maria Taylor at The Haunt on February 8th. I'll be doing that show just with Jen Mitta as a duo, and we have a bunch of new material.
Oh, great. Well, we can look forward to that. Also, contact information.
BronwynExter.com. And there are tabs to get to music and videos. And
great.
Press
great.
And everything.
Well, Bronwyn Exter, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the future and keep on writing these beautiful songs.
Thank you so much, Tish. It's been a pleasure.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.